Matt, we haven't even started. You can't break down yet.
You can't laugh at us yet, man.
Come on. That's, you need to break down at the end. You need to break down at the end when we learn that we haven't been recording. There is no card in there.
That's not even funny.
No, there is a card in there.
Okay, good.
Stanley Kubrick, Kurosawa,
the third man, Robert
Michelle Ryan Johnson.
The Phi Effect.
From Milwaukee, welcome to the Phi Effect podcast, where any film is open for discussion. You're listening to Matthew Baltz,
Jason Callen,
and Jacob Meridian.
Today, our episode theme will be strong females, inspired by our review of Mistress America. But first, we're going to be discussing The Visit, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
My parents asked if their grandchildren could visit them for a week.
Here we are.
This is where our mom grew up. I wanted to spend time with you for so long.
Miss you guys!
Mom, we're having a great time.
I have not seen your Nana this happy in years. Bedtime here is 9:30. It's probably best you two shouldn't come out of your room after that. See you in the morning.
9:30. What is that? It's 10:47. We think there's someone outside the door.
Becca and Tyler, having never met their grandparents, are sent to stay with Nana and Pop Pop, and things don't go as planned during the visit.
Roll credits.
It stars Olivia DeJonge, Ed Oxenbold, Deanna Dunnigan, and Peter McRobbie. Jacob, do we have any numbers on the opening weekend box office for this film?
Indeed, we do. Well, against a budget of only $5 million, it's so far made $29.3 million at the worldwide box office, and 25 of that was from the domestic box office. So, seeing as it's made back its budget nearly 600%, seems to be doing pretty well.
I had heard that he financed this whole thing himself, so that's a pretty modest success.
I heard he did that because on his last few films, he wasn't given final cut permissions. So this was a way to kind of ensure that.
Hmm.
I don't know how true that is, because I think it was only a blip on IMDb. So take that as you will.
So one could argue that his original ideas might have been masterpieces.
Or that he's covering his ass and blaming the studio because no one liked his movies.
His filmography is quite a world of ups and downs. You said his first feature was Wide Awake?
Wide Awake.
Wide Awake was 1998. What genre was that?
I think it was like family drama.
Yeah, family.
I've never seen it. I've actually wanted to see it because it just, like, the blip on Netflix sounds kind of interesting.
It's a family dramedy.
Oh. With Rosie O'Donnell, right?
amongst others.
And young children.
Like most of his movies.
After that, he came out with The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening, The Last Airbender, After Earth, and today we are reviewing The Visit. I've seen most of these. I haven't seen the ones that people claim are his worst, The Last Airbender or After Earth.
I haven't seen those, and I also haven't... Well, I haven't seen those, I haven't seen Lady in the Water, and I haven't seen Wide Awake, but I've seen everything else.
I have seen everything except for After Earth and The Last Airbender, and most of Wide Awake, and The Happening I have seen, and that has to be one of the worst movies ever made. I just want to throw that out there. It's a short list for worst movie ever made, ever.
It is one of my lowest rated films I've ever given.
Oh my God, what
a
horrible movie.
I try to understand the purpose behind it, but even still, it's pretty
bad. Well, he claimed, I don't know if he claimed it before or after the fact, but he claimed that it's supposed to be the best B-movie ever made.
That's what I heard too, and I went into the film trying to understand it as that, but even still, it was just really, really bad.
No, yeah, that's not going to work.
It was creepy.
No, it wasn't. It was stupid.
I mean, there are so many better ways to do, like, a B movie.
Anyways, yeah, we saw The Visit.
And The Happening sucks.
I have mixed feelings about The Visit. Well, I'm slowly beginning to dislike it more and more. It uses every found footage moment that has been utilized for the past 20 years. It seems like it just jumps from obligatory scene to obligatory scene, not only of found footage cliches, but of horror movie cliches, almost without reason. The acting, I thought, was terrible from the first shot. And there's the first half of the movie has almost no escalation during these kind of episodic moments, hitting the notes, trying to accumulate emotional baggage, trying to establish real relationships. I didn't really feel absorbed by this movie. Jason, how did you feel about the found footage? Do you think it's a reason to revive the genre?
Oh, by no means. No. I found the found footage format hard to watch and pretty obnoxious, like I usually do. I'm not a big found footage guy in general. This movie in general, I'm with you. I'm like, the more I think about it, the more I dislike it. It's hard to say things in the overview without, you know, providing spoilers. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say too much until we're done just giving overviews. But I had some serious issues with the structure of the film. It just didn't make sense at the end. And some other things. Again, I can't really talk about the things I want to talk about right now. But I did find it interesting to a point. Yeah, the acting horrible, and the found footage, the use of the technique didn't do anything new, didn't provide anything but an eyesore and, you know, a little bit of a headache. Not my bag.
Just rhyming away here.
Did I rhyme? Oh, man. I wasn't trying to.
Oh, you weren't trying to imitate some of the rapping order in the movie?
No. No, I wouldn't do that, because that would be really embarrassing. Sorry, Jacob.
I think I'm in the opposite boat of you guys. Like, I'm not going to say I love this film by any means, but I didn't think I would like it, and the more I think about it, the subtleties in it I kind of enjoy, because although this doesn't make an argument for found footage films, I think it kind of is a... I don't know if I want to say satire, but it's almost a critique of just the genre in general and just the way we view it as an audience, as we're always looking for certain things, when, which is kind of like how the kids are in the film. They're always looking for these weird things that happen with their grandparents, when for the first half of the film, they can be written off as just normal behavior in a way for old people. For old senile people, I guess.
Okay.
But... I don't know. I wouldn't call myself a Shyamalan fan or dis fan either. I guess I just feel kind of impartial about his style, which is why I thought it was weird a lot of critics were saying this was a return to form for him, because it's like, I don't think he's ever really changed form. He's just kind of kept it all the time, which maybe this is for later and not the actual overview. Yeah, I'll just save it for later. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of like this film because it just, for the first like half or two thirds of it, we think it's just either these kids are overreacting to nothing, or that there's going to be some weird sort of otherworldly twist that happens. And I think the interesting thing about that this film surprises us with is that it doesn't have something that's like otherworldly at the end. And if that's a spoiler, I apologize. And I appreciated that because I was expecting something otherworldly. So I was kind of pleased when it wasn't, and it was just a little more, I don't know if down to earth is the right word, down to after earth. But yeah, I don't know, as just a kind of really cheap, kind of silly look at found footage, I think it was kind of fun.
Well, that was exactly what I was trying not to spoil in my opening thing. The fact that it's not a paranormal. There's nothing paranormal about the film, or extraterrestrial or anything like that. That it is just people, but it functions in the same way. Really, it doesn't. I mean, there could have been, and it would have felt the same. I didn't feel like he was really doing anything to comment on the on the genre, at least not to the extent that it was like really effective. But that was I did find that interesting. That was my interesting to a point that I mentioned before, is the fact that it didn't contain any kind of supernatural explanations for it.
And I think that's what I kind of meant, is in like a critique of the genre, because it's like, when we watch films like these, we're always looking for like things that are a little out of the ordinary or something. And for like the first half of the film, he just convinces us that it's not really out of the ordinary. It's just, like you said, crazy people. It's not anything supernatural.
Right.
So it's kind of, in a way, maybe making fun of our expectations, what we've come to expect from this genre.
Maybe. I think, I don't know, I feel like he's more just wants to make some money by using the genre. I didn't feel like he was like making a passionate statement about the genre, more just exploiting it for a particular story. One that, I mean, I wish it had gone further into like the theme of like the loss, and like, because that was what was like drawing me in, was that the kids had, you know, been abandoned by their father, and there was all this, you know, turmoil, like mental instability, and her brother with his germ phobia and her own deal. What was her deal?
Her deal was she couldn't look into mirrors.
The mirrors, yeah, right, the mirrors. Which, again, that's another thing that's like, you think they're going to turn, you think he's going to turn the mirror thing into it. But by then, it's too late to really, because you're already pretty much down the road of like, okay, this is not going to be, there's no ghosts, there's no, they're not like aliens, there's nothing freaky, it's just your weird old grandparents. And then I won't say anything further about the grandparents.
Nana and Papa.
Nana and Papa.
Those very traits, the fact that the girl can't look in the mirror and the germophobia for the child, those not only reminded me of that same type of foreshadowing from Signs, if not only because it later comes back to aid them in their resolution, but it felt so obligatory. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Chekhov's gun analogy, but that just...
Oh, isn't that like, if you see the gun...
If you see the gun hanging above the mantelpiece, that it will be used.
Yeah, it'll be used by the third act.
So when these kids just out of nowhere mention, oh, he has germophobia, oh, she can't look in a mirror, and then it doesn't really integrate into the story.
Right.
It
especially the mirror thing, which was just like a random...
Yeah.
Like the germ thing, like, kind of worked it in the story of like the introduction to the grandparents.
I was hoping that these interviews were going to provide a little more meat to the story, like offer something worthwhile. But every time that they set up interviews or interviewed somebody, it either fell flat for me, like in the opening, or it simply served one single purpose, either to establish these character traits or to establish that this old woman is crazy or something or not. So it didn't feel like there was much beyond the main storyline that was trying to be fulfilled.
Kind of going off the character traits, it kind of ties back into Shyamalan's style in general and how he approaches movies, because I think this goes back to what I was talking about with like people saying return to form and stuff, and how he always seems to kind of keep the same form in terms of how he writes stories, writes characters, because they always have this, like, or they seem to have this strange eccentricity to them, and it's either it never feels like it's fully fleshed out, or it's quickly fleshed out and then disregarded. And yeah, this film kind of fell into that style, at least for me, because, I don't know, there's the way he approaches films, something about it seems very quaint and very, like, old-timey and very classic, but then at the same time he tries to maybe connect with like modern audiences or something, and I don't feel like that weird kind of divide gives this very kind of unnerving but unsettling feeling when I'm watching his films, because I like rewatched a couple of his older ones and I still get that feeling with it. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe it is something supernatural that he's putting into his films, but I did feel like this film still embodied that style of his, but maybe it was just I hadn't seen one of his films in a while, so it was more refreshing to see it now. I don't know. I don't know if that even made any sense. I'm just like trying to describe how
If by describing it as classic you mean that it feels like every other found footage movie out there, then
no,
doesn't
like,
make sense.
All of his films have this kind of, it feels like the characters are from another time. They don't really feel like they're from the time that they were made. I don't know if it's just the way they read the dialogue, or I don't know if it's just the characters in and of themselves, but they seem very detached from the worlds that they inhabit, and they almost seem like too witty for their own good, or too intertwined or emotionally entangled in what's going on. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm making sense anymore, but I don't know. All his films seem to have this very strange vibe to them.
I think I know what you're talking about. I'm not going to try and explain it or anything, but I think I understand what you're saying. And it makes a bit of sense. I mean, his characters are all kind of like cut off from the reality around them. The Haley Joel Osment character in Sixth Sense to whatever Bruce Willis, whatever his name was in Unbreakable. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all separated, either by themselves or by their circumstances. As far as like a return to form, though, I mean, he's obviously never done a found footage film before. So I don't see how anyone can really claim a return to form unless you just mean like as far as like being successful, like monetarily, like if that means return to form. But because he's never made a film like this before. In fact, his movies have always been like really well composed. Like he always works with good cinematographers, and they're always like very well composed. There's always like camera movement, and everything's very easy to understand. Whereas in this, obviously, with all found footage, like there's no continuity, there's nothing. It's just like you can just do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It's unbearable for me, really. I can't really stand it personally. But yeah, I've been hearing this return to form thing too. It is curious now that you talk about his characters and their arcs in his film, how this does fit into things he's done before, and particularly with Signs, as well as what you mentioned. There's that whole like the football thing that he ends up using at the end, you know, where mm-hmm. he freezes during the game, and then he uses that to finally.
Not only that.
Yeah, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I didn't want to. I thought you were going to give away like, something wait, that I was on, trying. I'm trying about? To actually like not spoil things for this particular movie.
Oh, we're good now. We're.
I know we're good, but I'm like just personally, I feel like. Yeah. Of all the movies we've done, that this one would suffer the most if someone's actually going to go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
From just
well, because that goes with his structure. It's like
right. I
that's
mean,
become yeah. like one of his
right.
trademarks.
It's his signature, and it's kind of tired, really. It's like I for a while I was like because I hadn't seen any of the trailers or anything for this. I knew it was found footage. I knew it was Shyamalan. That was all the information I had. So for a while I was like, is this supposed to be a comedy? Like, where are we? What am I doing here exactly? Because nothing was scary. This movie didn't scare me at all, ever. Like, not even close. It didn't get anywhere close. It was always humorous.
Just like jump scares, which is just like
those
whatever.
Didn't even work, really. I mean,
I don't know. I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to jump scares. So kind of, but.
Tired. Yes, you use the word tired, and that's what it felt like. I will admit that some parts were creepy, but not enough. But you had mentioned the football analogy, how that comes into play. Haha, pun not intended. Did you also notice the mirror thing? The mirror saves her, whereas the football, his fear turned out to be, you know, this football story. Right. And so that integrated into how he rescues himself or rescues his sister.
Right.
Her phobia is looking into mirrors, and that ultimately comes out as her salvation.
Right.
So that felt tired.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's the baseball bat and Signs all over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swing away. Yeah, it was...
Like, all of his, like, themes in his writing seem very kind of surface deep. Like, there's really no depth to, like, any of his films in terms of... metaphors and themes and symbolism and stuff like that. It's
he really,
just like
he puts
all
this stuff like right there and then never goes anywhere with it. I just watched the Lady in the Water, or excuse me, Lady in the Water. It's not the lady. It's Lady
Bryce
in the
Dallas
Water.
Howard in the Water.
Yes. Bryce Dallas Howard in the Water, you know. Keep her from acting too much.
Whoa.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Keep her dialogue to a minimum. But he's the same thing there. He has this really great in this movie, he's got a like great everything. There's like a great cast and a great cinematographer, but in particular, he's got Paul Giamatti, who's a great actor in my opinion, And he has actually like a really compelling story for him. And the movie is kind of about it, but it's not really about it, but it really should be about it. And he just doesn't ever seem to be willing to go far enough with those secondary themes. Like it's if it all has to come back to the whatever the stupid plot is, which is just really kind of aggravating because, again, he gets so close and he gets good actors and he has like the good outline of depth, like where you're ready to dive in, but then he just never goes for it. So yeah, I guess I agree with you, Jake.
That's what I was going to say. We had a discussion about, I think, directors and actors a while ago, and whether or not they should be criticized for, you know, just kind of doing the same thing over and over, just kind of keeping the same style. And I don't know, I see Shyamalan as other people who could be, I don't know if I'd consider Shyamalan an auteur, but other people will like point out auteurs and how their style stays the same throughout each movie, or how certain actors will like take the same role in same projects. And that's how I kind of see Shyamalan. Like I said, I haven't seen more of his recent stuff like Lady in the Water, Last Airbender, and After Earth. So I don't know how any of those films fit into it, but he still has this like same style, and whether you like it or not, it really hasn't changed much. So I mean, I don't know.
I guess you'd have to define auteur for me, the way that, like, because nobody really...
I'm just saying, like, auteurs, like, people will point to them, and because usually they'll have, like, a specific style.
Right. Again, okay, all... I guess that's different from... It's almost polar opposite from actually how I, like, interpreted auteur when I, like, first heard of it, which would be that a given director can be given any material... And you would still be able to identify it as that director's. So, you know, a person like Shyamalan, you could give him a action film or a farce, and he would still be able to put his voice on it. So I don't really feel like he fits that mold necessarily. I feel like he's more strictly like a genre director.
Okay.
And I haven't seen After Earth, and I haven't seen The Last Airbender. But I think that's pretty much it. You know, so he is primarily just, you know, sticking to horror, thriller, and then I guess After Earth is sci-fi, but again, haven't seen it.
Well, Signs could be considered sci-fi, right?
Yeah, that's sci-fi true. Sci-fi. I guess to me, Signs, like the aliens aren't really that important to the film. It's not really about the aliens.
Not really important to the logic of the film.
Well, yeah, it's like... Don't start the whole water thing because it's just stupid. It doesn't
matter. Oh, I'll bring it up.
It doesn't matter. I mean, he's not a perfect filmmaker, but that was the last movie of his I liked.
But I don't know. Like all of his films, I watch them and they feel like he has his own stamp on it. Granted, it's because he hasn't worked with like anybody else's script. He just wrote and direct like everything or co-wrote After.
Yeah, he definitely has his own stamp. I'm arguing about how we define auteur, and it doesn't, I guess it's not really pertinent. Like, I think we're saying the same thing that it's identifiable, but I don't think he could transfer that to other genres. I don't think you're going to see like a Shyamalan drama, like straight up drama, or right. A Shyamalan comedy, you know.
This is probably the closest thing to a Shyamalan.
Yeah, that's exactly like this maybe a satire. Like I
approached
scratching my head on the way out of the woods.
You're right. I found more humor in this movie than horror.
Oh, way more. And
I don't think it was a deep or like a very thorough satire, but I think there were elements of satire in it, which is why I think I appreciated this more, because he didn't try to do a straight up thriller. So
yeah, no, I appreciate that aspect. I just don't think it was compelling or well done. And before I mentioned the structure of the film, and I never got really back to it, but it doesn't make any sense to have that coda at the end with her brother doing that stupid rap, like, and making it seem as if the film we had just watched was her film. That doesn't make any sense at all to as far as what you viewed.
Ooh. I wanted to bring up something in terms of found footage and like cinematography that we were talking about, which kind of ties into this. It was, what was the point with all of the establishing shots? I don't think I've seen any found footage film with as many establishing shots as this film.
But they're not it's establishing like, shots for this film. Those are establishing shots for the film to be that is supposed to be like her deal, her exploration of her, you know, meeting her parents and all, her grandparents and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the film that she's like promoting at the end, but that's not the film we watched. Like we watched someone who found like her footage and just kind of threw it on. Like it's not, it doesn't make any sense of it being her movie, because she otherwise, like she talks about edits. Like why wouldn't you made those edits? Why are we watching you talking about edits that are like talking about stuff that shouldn't be in the film?
You're right. It's you really can't identify if this is technically found footage or if this is her final product, because it has clearly been edited. I mean, you're not stepping outside and recording these establishing shots while these grandparents are inside threatening your life.
Well, maybe. I mean, were there establishing shots?
There were establishing
shots.
It was
like,
well,
yeah,
of
like time of day and stuff. They'd be like, ooh,
I thought
like
they were
tree
all
line.
They were all explainable by a camera somewhere, like one of their cameras. It wasn't necessarily additional.
It would cut to, all of a sudden it would cut to a shot of the trees.
I remember the
night.
Shot of the trees, and I thought, and I remember thinking at the time, I'm like, is that a shot outside of their footage? But then I thought I put it together that it could have still been, but maybe I was wrong. I don't know. Again, like it's I don't
So someone
doesn't deserve this kind of attention.
So someone is editing this footage, but they're leaving in these moments that are clearly behind the scenes shots that have no purpose at all.
Yeah, again, like it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, because the purpose of found footage is supposed to be like somebody found it and tried to put something together.
What's the purpose of it?
But they would have to,
and you don't want, because like the idea of establishing shots like that is to show the progression of time or something like that. You don't want that in a found footage film. You want to keep it kind of, you know, you want to keep the pace going, like something was constantly happening. You don't want to see like, oh, look, they're going to sleep now. It's getting dark. It's something happening.
So very early on, I realized that this idea had not been established. And I think I just lost track of how many times they broke their own rule.
Yeah, I didn't really... It didn't really occur to me how disjointed it all seemed until the very end, and I was like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. But maybe I just haven't seen enough found footage to make it make sense, or maybe it just is really horrible. I have a friend who's been, like, watching found footage for, like, the past year. I wish I had him next to me, and he could, like, give me some hints to make me understand or you know, appreciate either this movie or even the genre as a whole. Like
if they're watching as much crap as I think they're watching, then I don't know if they could give you any appreciative hints.
It does seem like it, so I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. Is this a genre that you are fond of in general, or either of you guys?
I haven't seen
a horror guy anyway, right?
Well, I haven't seen enough like found footage to say I'm a fan. I've seen a few here and there, and I think most of the ones I have seen are like outside of the horror genre.
Okay.
But yeah, when we were talking about like the cinematography and whether we don't know if it's like, you know, her putting it together, somebody else putting it together, and all these shots that don't seem found footage-y.
Right.
Part of me was reminded of District 9, because that film, the thing that annoyed me about that film is it starts out as kind of a found footage-y film, and then by the end of the film it just turns into a straightforward, regular narrative film. And the found footage aspect is pretty much lost.
Well, it does that like after the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think that is just because of
I think it was a little longer than that.
No.
I think it's just because that opening sequence of District 9 is supposed to be like that broadcast.
It establishes everything in its found footage format and then goes straight into narrative.
Yeah, I don't think it lasts.
It starts long. Following the progs.
Prong. I don't remember. It's been around a while since I've seen it.
It starts following them like way at the beginning. Like when they're searching through the dumpster.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
That's what irked me about that movie is it establishes it uses found footage like in the very beginning and then ditches it.
Yeah, that's what annoyed me too, because it felt like, why can't we keep this like as a found footage thing? Because then that seems a little cooler instead of just.
I assume they were using it to quickly establish this world.
Which is what so many other movies do too, with like broadcast footage and stuff like that. It's just like, how do we get the exposition out in like as little time as we can? There we go.
Well, I wish they would have at least, you know, used some sort of frame structure, you know, someone's looking through this broadcast footage and editing it, and then we see it's actually a narrative, because why establish that you are sitting through this found footage experience and then nope, we're gonna change
it's not
gears
a found
completely.
Footage experience in that movie though. Well, it's just a broadcast that's
okay.
being all right,
my
being,
mistake.
Right?
Is no, it, no,
aren't
they were,
running around
no,
with
they
camera?
Were, well,
he's running around with cameras. There's even isn't there shots of the cameraman? Like there's POV shots from the camera that would be like the found footage shots
they
that
make
you're
it
talking
seem
about. But
like
then there's
they're...
actual shots of the cameraman too. I don't think there's even, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen that movie, but
They make it seem like it's kind of a documentary or something at first, and then it shifts, which is like...
I didn't read it like that. I just always thought of it as just like an intro. I'd have to see it again. It's been a couple of years.
But anyway, yeah, you mentioned... You asked us how well we know found footage movies. I guess I've seen a little too many, because I can pick out these specific occurrences throughout the movie that seem to be derived from other found footage movies. At first I was kind of appreciative that he takes the camera and has the character set it out in the living room so that we can capture it from one perspective. I thought that was unique that they would do that. Then I remembered, oh, this is just what Paranormal Activity did for the whole movie.
They got it to pan.
And the moment where she uses the camera to break off the doorknob, that was from the movie Quarantine, where the camera is used as a weapon. Hilarious both times.
Yeah, it was pretty.
That camera wouldn't have survived one swing.
I was found that hard to believe, but at that point I really didn't care because I know it's not a genre I really have found much appreciation for. I mean, I understand why filmmakers like it, because it's really, really like cheap, and nothing has to look good ever. So I can understand like that motivation, but I don't understand like why like fans like it. I don't understand why they're so popular.
I think it was just one of those things that there was, you know, one film that tried it. It was unique at the time, so everybody just jumped on the bandwagon. That film being like Blair Witch or something else around that time, which
like Cannibal Holocaust was like,
which
you know,
in and of itself isn't even that great.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible. Blair
I think
Witch
I watched
so
it
terrible.
For the first time ever like last year, and I was like, is this supposed to be scary? It's like,
it's not at all scary. Did you see Willow Creek? I think I might have mentioned that on the show. Bobcat Goldthwait's found footage film.
Wait, is that the new... Wait, because he has like a new film coming out this year.
He
That's
does...
not the new one that
no,
just came out,
No, this was last
is it?
Year. I think it was 2014 that it came out.
With a name like that, it has to be good.
It wasn't good, but it contained a single like 17-minute shot that was just two people like in the frame getting scared for like 17 minutes. And like, because they're in a tent and the camera's like right on them and all this noise is going on and it just like watches them. So that like it had that, which is about as interesting as a thing I've seen in any found footage.
I would actually argue that found footage movies probably require more talent and effort to successfully pull off, because not only do you need to shoot it and edit it and act it well, but you need to portray it in a way where it looks like you're not trying, but it needs to come off. Like, for instance, practically every shot in this movie, the subject is on screen. Even when they are not supposed to be on screen, even when they're running or sitting in a car and the camera would normally just be looking in any wild direction, the subject is always on screen, and that did not feel real to me. So I feel like the goal for a found footage movie is to make it feel realistic in the sense that you're not trying to get the subject on screen or you're not trying to get that audio, but you must also get that subject. You must also get that audio.
Yeah, I guess I haven't really found one that works then, because that never happens. There's always a point where you're like, why are you filming this? Why was this footage ever created in the first place? Oh, right, because you have a plot here that you have to further along, and you have to film it somehow, and you've stuck yourself in this found footage format, so all right, I guess we'll just have this real huge incongruity in the middle of the film where it's some ridiculous thing where you take the camera into, I don't know, like a pitch black something or other, but yet I can still see, or it doesn't even matter. Like it's kind of ridiculous scenario where you're like, the camera just wouldn't have it on. There's no reason that this should be filmed.
Well, it's kind of interesting in some films when they just play off the presence of the camera is kind of like the MacGuffin, which is kind of how I felt with like Chronicle, because I think they even ask him multiple times, like, why are you filming this? And he either stutters and then somebody else runs into frame like, oh, guys, come check this out. Or it's like, oh, come on, we got to go here.
Right.
Or he just never gives like a straight answer.
No, I mean, he's pretty determined to film everything right away. The brilliant part of that movie, though, was that they used his powers. Like, his powers enabled the camera to do things that you can't really do in found footage things, like
exactly.
Send it into the air and get, like, crane shots and all this other stuff that you can't do.
Which is what was kind of also weird, because at times it looked a little too polished because of that. But at the same time, it's like, even though it does feel awkward, like, we never really know why he's filming it, because the camera is just there, I think like I said, when you approach it as just a MacGuffin, it's just there. It's the thing that moves the plot along. Then right. It just kind of makes sense.
Right. In that movie, like the maybe one successful found footage movie that I can think of. Yeah, that's totally true.
And I don't know.
But it's such a brilliant move. It's such like a great it like frees you from the format and like allows you to do more things, which is, I don't know, I think the only way to really succeed with these.
I mean, we could probably dive even deeper into this, like the presence of technology in the modern era and like the necessity to like record things or use the camera as a way to like somehow psychologically distance yourself from something. But I don't know if found footage films demand that kind of
some of them might.
Philosophical and introspection.
Even The Visit wanted to have that kind of subtext, but it was another one of these things that didn't go
far enough.
It just was kind of there on the surface and never really came through.
I think here it felt like maybe it was just more compelling than his other like surface themes in his previous work, which is maybe why I dug it more. Maybe I actually did think this one went a little deeper than his other films do, but I don't know. I can't bring myself to hate as much as you guys, but I'm not defending it as a great film.
I didn't say I hated it. Like I said, it is interesting to a certain point, but for me it just fails because it's so hard to watch. Mm. Like literally just not pleasant to watch. And I mean, I saw it on an ultra screen too, which was like, why are they playing this movie on an ultra screen? This is like the last movie they should be playing on an ultra screen. So maybe if I watched it on a slightly smaller screen, it might play a little better. As I think, you know, these kind of handheld movies generally do, even ones that aren't found footage. But yeah, I didn't hate it. It wasn't like when I saw The Village and I was literally like mad leaving the theater.
I guess I did dislike it more than
it hasn't
either of you guys.
Like thinking about it hasn't helped it. Like a day later, I would have been, you know, one of the better ones to actually record right after seeing it. Like I had been, because pondering this movie, it definitely deteriorated. It was not. I got out of the theater. I was like, all right, this is kind of interesting. And then I was like, this is not so interesting.
This
is getting less interesting. This is really horrible.
I really wish there were purpose for me to go into discussions such as, oh, the soiled diapers hidden away in the shed is M. Night Shyamalan criticizing his own work, or the bodies buried in the basement is M. Night Shyamalan just metaphorically commenting on his blah, blah, blah.
He's literally shoving his shit in your face.
I wish we could go.
You just did, dude.
Just
opened the door.
I could feel like that was vindicated and justified, but I just don't. I don't. No, I'm not buying it anymore.
No, I don't think he has that low opinion of his own work, really.
I don't think he has that high a critical opinion of his own work.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a movie every couple of years. Somehow he still gets jobs, even though pretty much everything since Signs is bombed pretty largely.
But you know somebody out there is going to take this apart layer by layer and say it's the greatest thing ever.
Oh, I'm sure. And, you know, stuff now with worldwide takes and stuff, like movies are distributed more. Like his movies probably do well overseas or something. That's why he probably keeps getting gigs.
Well, that was the case with After Earth. It was considered a flop domestically, but it made most of its budget back overseas. Now, we can argue whether that's the strength of his name or Will Smith. We can debate that.
Well, that's true, too. But Will
Will Smith is like one of the highest paid actors ever.
He's one of the most recognizable actors on the earth. I guess that's kind of unfortunate. I don't really like him that much. I'm curious about the concussion.
Looks pretty good.
That's another discussion.
Yes, it is.
Another discussion on concussion.
Let's move on to our episode theme. Every episode, we choose a theme connected with our previous review. Last time, we talked about Mistress America, and so this episode, we have chosen films about strong females. And Jason, I would like to ask you to open this one up.
Alrighty. Well, I picked a film that I just happened to catch. It might have even been that night of the recording. But that I just kept thinking about and was really impressed. It was the second time I saw it, and it is Up in the Air, Jason Reitman's, I think, third movie. I'm not really a Reitman fan, but I do like this movie a lot, and the character played by Vera Farmiga, I believe that's how you say her name, is the character that I'm choosing. It occurred to me that both the her and Anna Kendrick's character could have worked for this theme, but I'm going to choose Vera Farmiga's Alex Gorin is her name, which, if I could just interject quickly, mm-hmm. is the name of the team, the two detective team on Law & Order CI. Like, the woman's name is Alex and his last name is Gorin. So just a little trivia note there. But anyway, her character of Alex Gorin, who describes herself within the film as like George Clooney with a vagina. That's what she says to him. She says, just, you know, you don't have to worry about. Okay, so I should probably give a little setup in case.
I haven't seen this. It, so yeah.
So his job is to go around and fire people. He gets hired by companies to come in and, you know, downsize and stuff like that. So she, I don't even remember what she does in the movie, but he meets her in like an airport because she had some other kind of job where she travels a lot. And they commence this kind of casual sexual relationship that, of course, you know, leads to, in a way, a romantic entanglement of sorts. And she's portrayed very confidently, very independent, you know, very, very much, like she says, a counterpart to George Clooney, who plays a George Clooney type, quick-talking, witty, you know, we all know who George Clooney is. So she's a very strong character. It occurred to me, though, when thinking about this film, that, like, how I was defining a strong female character was completely dependent on, like, a strong male lead, like, the characteristics that might, you know, like, I guess, like, compared to like the weakness of last week's female leads to what I was considering as a strong lead. I don't really have anything to say on that, but it seemed strange that I couldn't come up with some other way to define strong female characters other than kind of acting we expect men to act in these films. Now, her character, he falls in love with her and he thinks one thing, and then it turns out that she actually like has a family and like has just been, but because he shows up at her door and like blows the whole thing up. And that moment was kind of how I ended up picking her, because it turns her from just a simple mirror image of him to like something a little more complex, where she's you know, it's more, I mean, more like immoral, like a little more gray area to go on top of like just the fact that she was, you know, behaving in this quote-unquote manly fashion. But yeah, really good movie, and I don't know, Vera Farmiga is a good actress who I just, you know, she usually does like small parts, and she's always a very strong presence. So I recommend that to both of you and anyone listening. Up in the Air.
I've seen Up in the Air.
Yeah.
It was okay.
I liked it. Well, the first time I saw it, I thought, yeah, it's okay, and then I just happened to catch it, and it was starting, and watched the whole thing. And I was actually quite impressed. I was surprised how much I liked it the second time.
Not the biggest fan of Jason Reitman.
No, I'm not either. I'm not a real. I guess I liked Thank You for Not Smoking, or Thank You for Smoking.
I like that one.
And Juno, like, and I'm.
I really want those kids to talk normal.
I know.
Why did that win Best Screenplay?
I don't know, because it's quirky and
gross.
Because Diablo Cody was once a stripper.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I have nothing against that.
No, I have nothing against that either. But I didn't see his last couple, which were both pretty much pan, the Labor Day and Men, Women, Children.
I've seen parts of Young Adult. I haven't seen it all the way through.
Yeah, I did see Young Adult. I actually didn't mind that one. I actually thought it was a lot better than I expected it to be. I think probably because Charlize Theron is actually a pretty decent actress. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, for my movie, I chose a film from 1964 called Seance on a Wet Afternoon. Directed by Brian Forbes. I had recently seen this movie and it just kind of stuck on my mind, and so I felt I had to talk about it. And it works for the strong female role because the actress Kim Stanley is in this movie alongside Richard Attenborough, and her role is a psychic, and she is clearly disturbed, and she is clearly overbearing in a way that she can control Richard Attenborough to a point. And so she uses him and manipulates him to kidnap a child of another family so that she can use her psychic abilities to kind of achieve fame. She has a strong menace to her character. And so the strength in that and the kind of fear that she creates is really memorable in a way. The movie overall is spectacular. I can't praise it enough. It's called Seance on a Wet Afternoon by Brian Forbes. And then, Jacob, did you have one?
Yeah. I was going to go with one, but I think I used it as a theme already, so I'm going to skip it. So I'm going to go with last year's film by Gillian Robesphere called Obvious Child, which I was a little hesitant when I first saw it because it looked like just kind of a standard rom-com. But I don't think I laughed harder at any other movie that I saw in theaters last year than I did at Obvious Child, which surprised me because it's full of a lot of like scatological humor and stuff, which I don't really find all that funny, but just that and just the dynamics between Jenny Slate's main character and her best friend Gabby Hoffman's character as they're just trying to, or as Jenny Slate is trying to kind of come to terms with how her life is falling apart because she recently broke up, she's losing her job, she finds out that she's pregnant, she's having family troubles. Yeah, everything's just kind of crumbling down on her, and she has to kind of, she's trying to make it as a stand-up comedian as well, and she just kind of has to find her own way to deal with things. And it's, it shows that even at your lowest points, you can still kind of fight through, and you don't really need anyone else to be there for you. You don't need a man to come save you or anything like that. As long as you're strong-willed and have good friends, I mean, they can help you through. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was a nice, cute little film.
Is it an American film?
Yeah. I think it premiered at Sundance, and then A24 bought it. It was... a lot of people were calling it an abortion comedy because that is, like, one of the topics, whether or not she decides to have an abortion. Another thing that made that film interesting was it didn't make that its like main theme to talk about. It was just like a side topic that happened to her, and it was just, you know, one of the things she had to decide whether or not, you know, she wanted to have a kid. It was just like, it wasn't the main issue of the film. It was just a side issue of her life. It was just one of the multiple things she was trying to deal with. And that's what a lot of people pointed out. It's like, the film isn't about, you know, being pro-life or pro-choice. It's just, this is a film about a woman whose life is falling apart, and this is just one of the things she has to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's just more about how she comes out on top, or tries to come out on top and salvage what little bit of her existence she has left. So.
Cool. Let's check that out.
Well, that's going to conclude today's review of The Visit. If you're in the Milwaukee area, you can catch The Visit at IPIC Theaters in Bayshore, AMC at Mayfair, or any General Marcus Theater. Join us next time for our review of the upcoming film Black Mass, as long as it sticks to its release date. Who directs Black Mass?
Scott Cooper, who had previously done Crazy Heart and Out of the Furnace.
Great. I've seen both of those.
I've seen neither, so I will have to catch up on them.
All right. Well, you are listening to Matthew Baltz,
Jason Callum,
and Jake Meridian.
This is the Phi Effect Podcast. Thank you for listening. Language, man.
Kids, don't be like me. Use pop stars' names instead.
Exactly. What were some of them that he used?
Shakira. Katy Perry.
Katy Perry.